Well, if you were here last week, you remember.
Well, you might not remember. I bet none of you actually do remember. But if you did remember, the title of the sermon last week was The End. And then this week, we're still looking at end times. So the only appropriate title was More of the End. And next week, we're still kind of on the same theme. So I might title it Even More of the End, but we'll see. Matthew chapter 24, if you're not there yet. But let me read you a few verses out of the book of Hebrews, actually. Hebrews chapter 10, starting in verse 36, it says, "Patient endurance is what you need now, so that you will continue to do God's will. Then you will receive all that He has promised. In just a little while, the coming one will come, and He will not delay. And my righteous one will live by faith. But I will take no pleasure in anyone who turns away." It's Hebrews chapter 10, verses 36 to 38. So last week, we saw the disciples ask a question. And basically, they were asking a question about when's the world going to end? Okay, when's the world going to end? When is it that Jesus is coming back? And they asked, what will the signs be as the time comes for your return? And we saw Jesus start to answer that last week, and he talked about all these signs and these crazy things that would happen. And there's all kinds of ideas out there about the end of the world. There's been surveys done where people go and ask in all the different countries and different religions and different beliefs, how is the world going to end? How is the world going to end? And a lot of people would say, well, it's not going to end. Okay, the world's never going to end, which I think that that's just them saying what they wish was true. Okay, the world's not going to end. It'll be fine forever. And then there's a lot of people that say, well, the world is going to end when people so destroy the earth. We've used up all the resources. We've thrown our garbage everywhere. It's so polluted that, the world just can't sustain life anymore. But do you know that the Bible tells us that the world's not going to end because of the actions of man? The world's going to end because of the actions of God. That's when the world's going to end. What's going to happen between now and then? Will we have practically destroyed the world? Maybe. I can't say. But the end, that's going to happen because of God. This passage today is going to teach us a little bit more about what's going to happen in the end and how we should respond. And really, it's going to show us, as I read, the consequences of being unprepared. Unprepared. So starting in verse 29 is where we're at. It says, "Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heaven will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and with great glory. And he will send his angels with the great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other." So here it says, immediately after the tribulation. And we talked about the tribulation last week. Okay, the tribulation is this period of time in the end days where there is going to be extreme suffering, extreme difficulty, extreme pain, extreme discomfort, torment. I use the word extreme because it's going to be worse than any suffering, torment, discomfort, pain that's ever been experienced before this time. Okay, there's this 7-year period of extreme suffering and difficulty known as the tribulation. And thousands of years before that's going to happen, God spoke and the sun and the moons and the stars appeared. Okay, God spoke and the sun appeared. And then here, it's time to turn the lights off. Okay, time to turn the lights off. They're done. They're done. And this kind of sounds like a scary thing. Like right now, all this, the sun goes away. The stars, it says fall from their space. Like, I don't know what that means. But the moon just turns off. You know, if God just turns the light switch off, that sounds like a pretty terrifying thing. I might be making this up, but I think I recall hearing that when people used to see eclipses, they thought, like, the world is ending. You know, the moon would pass in front of the sun, and they're like, the world is ending. Everyone run. The sky is falling. Sounds like kind of a scary thing. And for many people, the second coming of Jesus, that's what we're talking about here, is a terrible, terrible thing. For them, they've been experiencing the tribulation, and Jesus coming is just a sign that it's been bad, and now it's going to even get worse. Now it's going to get worse. I won't get into all the details, but during the tribulation, you can read about it in the book of Revelation, and during it, there's going to be 21 individual catastrophes. Like extremely dangerous, terrible judgments from God that is unleashed on the entire world. Okay, there's no, you know, you're not going to be able to stay on Bintan Island and think, well, we're on this tiny little island. God's going to ignore us up here. No, it's going to cover the whole world. Some of the things that happen, you'll see just like a third of the world is destroyed at a time. And again, we don't have time to get into what all those are, but it's going to be really, really bad. And yet, at the end, for some, it's just a sign that it's about to get worse. About to get worse. You know, and then at the end, everything goes dark and they see Jesus coming back. So Jesus is going to come back, and it's going to be undeniable. We talked about that last week. People are going to know. They'll see it. They'll recognize it. And he's going to come back with power and glory, it says. So unlike his first coming, where he came in humility and kind of unknown, born in a manger, he's coming back with power. With power. Some are terrified, but some are going to be relieved. Some are terrified, some are relieved. All depending on their faith or their lack of faith. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, it says, when the Lord is revealed from heaven with his mighty angels, he's going to either grant relief to the faithful who are waiting for his arrival, or he will, and this is a direct quote, inflict vengeance on those who do not know God and those who do not obey. He's either going to grant relief or inflict vengeance. One or the other. So this is either scary, terrible, terrifying, or beautiful. All depending on the faith. And the theme of today really is, are you ready or not? Are you ready or not? Verse 32, after they're seeing this, they're seeing Jesus come, it says, now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and it puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see these things, you know that it is near at the door. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away until these things take place. I actually read too far. Got a little spoiler there. But here, you're seeing Jesus do what he's done many times, is give a lesson based on the nature that's around them. He's like, hey, you know fig trees? And then he teaches this lesson to get across an important idea. Now, if you're from the Philippines, I don't know if the imagery he's using will be quite as strong and clear as if you're from Wisconsin, because he's saying there comes a time where the fig tree, it blossoms, it shoots forth a leaf, and you're all excited because you know that summer is coming. So in Wisconsin, winter is long and dark and depressing and cold. I know for those of you who haven't seen snow, it's like, no, it'd be really awesome. Yeah, for about 5 minutes, it's really awesome. And then it's painful and not enjoyable. And there comes a point around March where you've just had enough of winter. Okay, it's been 5 months of winter. You just want the snow to melt. You just want to be warm. You're sick of your face hurting from the cold, and you see on a tree that there's just the tiniest little blossom, just evidence of a leaf starting to grow. And you're really excited because you know that means summer is coming. That means summer is coming. And he's just saying that the way that we understand the seasons changing, that's how it is with end times. You know, you're going to see these signs, and then you're going to know. Then you're going to know it's just around the corner. It's right at the door. If you don't know the phrase, you know, if something's at the door, it's like, well, they're here. Okay, if you're expecting people to come over to your house and they're at the door, you don't have any time to finish cleaning or make your house look good. They're there. However it is how it's going to be. So he's saying the leaves on the fig tree is a sign, a proof of what is to come. And then he says that all of these signs, everything that he discussed last week and that we see here, are evidence, proof of his coming. If you remember last week, he talked about the wars, the rumors of war, the famine, the earthquakes. So Jesus assured that when these signs appear, as he foretold, remember the abomination of desolation and all of that, those signs will happen, and then his return will follow. Then he's here. Then he's at the door. So when a fig tree buds, there is the knowledge that summer is near and fruit is coming. And in the same way, when these signs are seen, the coming of Jesus in glory, in power, in judgment is undeniable, and it will inevitably follow. Verse 34, assuredly I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. So if you just read that fast, you might be left with a question, because Jesus is talking to these people, and he says, this generation isn't going to pass away before everything happens and I return. Well, there's a problem. Right? There's a problem because that generation has passed away. Okay, Matthew, he's not alive anymore. James and John and the disciples he's talking to, they passed away. So what do we do with this? I'll tell you the answer isn't that, well, the Bible must be wrong. Let's just, you know, throw it out the window. Who needed these brand new Bibles? Because they're not even true. No, the Bible's still accurate. We just need to put in a little work and figure out, what does Jesus mean? What does he mean? Is he referring to the generation that he was speaking to 2,000 years ago? No, he can't be. Okay? He can't be. Because, I don't know if you looked outside today, but the sun is still there. The sun's still shining. The moon is still there. The stars haven't fallen from their place. So he can't be talking about that. So is he talking about our generation? Maybe. I can't say. It depends. It depends. The generation that he is referring to, the generation that he is referring to is the generation that's going to be around at the start of those signs. And what he is saying is those who are alive at the start of those signs, those who see the beginning, unless they die prematurely, unexpectedly, they're going to see the end. It's going to happen fast. Once the end of the world starts, once this process begins, Jesus isn't going to delay. A generation is kind of understood to be 20 to 30 years. So he says it's not going to take long once I get started. In verse 35, he tells us that although the world is going to end, we can trust that his word never will. So yeah, the world's going to end, and there's nothing you can do about it, but my words will never pass away. And he does that here for a few reasons. First of all, it emphasizes and it strengthens, reminds us of the certainty of his promise. And he had to do that because if you pay attention to what Jesus just described, it sounds pretty crazy. Like, well, Jesus, I don't really know if I believe you. You're saying the sun's going to shut off? you're saying all of these crazy things are going to happen. Jesus says, yep, my word's not going to pass away. You can trust it. You can trust it. His words are more permanent than the universe itself. God's words are more permanent than the universe. So even when the world changes, or even when heaven and earth pass away, his promises will remain true. He also does this to kind of contrast, show the difference between the temporary, you know, the temporary things that we find ourselves thinking are important, that are here today and gone tomorrow, and the eternal. Everything physical that we are so consumed with, that's before us today, even this earth, is going to pass away. Are any of you guys really into, like, saving the planet? I don't think it's as much of an issue here in the Philippines as it is in the U.S., but there's people who are like, we have got to recycle, we have to stop driving cars, we have to do all we can to save the world. I'm not against recycling. You want to recycle, you want to try to keep the... I hate pollution, so I'm all for taking care of the planet. But there's no saving it. It's going to pass away. It's temporary. God's word isn't. Okay, this is reminded many times. In 2 Peter, we see that the world's going to pass away. In Isaiah 40, we see that God's word remains forever. And he does this to call for our trust in his promises and our obedience to it. So if Jesus' words are never going to pass away, then his commands, his warnings, his promises are all completely, entirely reliable. So we should take them seriously, and we should live accordingly. We should live in light of what he has said. Because what he says is true. Is true. Verse 36. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. In the Gospel of Mark, there's an added sentence that gives even greater detail to this. And it says, not even the Son. Not even the Son. Meaning that Jesus doesn't know when he is coming back. Only God the Father. Which is kind of a crazy thing to understand. But the idea here that really matters is that we aren't going to know. We're never going to know. And I was going to look up some of the people who have predicted kind of the end of the world. If you guys heard people, they're like, well, I looked in the Bible and I added this verse number, you know, and I looked at Daniel and there's 300 of these. And in this, you know, in Zechariah chapter 7, it says this. And I took these letters and I assigned them each a corresponding number. People do that kind of stuff. They write books thousands of pages long on just complete nonsense. Sometimes the church, we get emails from people who want to explain to us how they did the math, and they know when the world is going to end. What's crazy is they seem to have done that from careful study of the Bible and evidently never read Matthew chapter 24, verse 36. They carefully studied the Bible, and they totally missed this verse. And like I said, I was going to go through a list of some of the people who have done this, and there's several of them from the Philippines, just so you know, and America. There's probably several all over. But I didn't, and you know why? Because as I started to search and do some research on this, there is so many of them. There's so many of these crazy false prophets who are saying, we have this secret knowledge of when the world's going to end. Hundreds and hundreds of them. There was a guy, he wrote a book called 88 Reasons Why the World is Going to End in 1988. Yeah, 2012, that was a big one, you know. There was two different reasons why they thought 2012 was going to be the end of the world. I'm old enough to remember that everyone thought the world was going to end for Y2K, 1999 to 2000. Most of you aren't old enough for that. And guess what? It didn't happen. The guy who wrote that book about the 88 reasons, after it didn't happen, he just kept prolonging it. He would release an edited version of his book and be like, well, actually, it's 89, and actually... He just kept doing that. So I don't know when the world is going to end. do you know what the Bible says should happen to prophets if what they say is going to happen doesn't happen? They should be killed. It says they should be taken to the gates of the city and stoned. Okay, so these guys shouldn't be listened to. I'm not suggesting you guys should go kill them. I'm saying you should not listen to them. Don't buy their books. And I don't know when the world's going to end. The only days that I know it isn't going to end are the days that people have predicted that it will. I can confidently say that those days, we shouldn't be looking for the return of Christ because he said no one knows. So these crazy people that lie, probably just to sell books, that think they have the special knowledge are liars. Liars. Okay, so in trying to prove how smart they are, they prove that they don't know the Bible, which happens in many other ways. Just so you know, there's lots of people that they think they're really smart, and when they try to prove how smart they are, they prove they're ignorant of God and they know nothing of him. Not just in the end of the days prediction, but for example, someone who wants to show up to our Bible study and teach how God isn't a Trinity, three in one. Okay, this just happened this past week. Someone wanted to come and prove how smart they were, and they wanted to debate. And in trying to do that, they proved they don't know the Bible. So a lot of these false teachers that think that they know more than everyone else just prove that they don't. So be careful. And there's big churches here in Cebu that think they know when the world's going to end. They think they have special information on the end of the world. They don't. So do your research. If you're wondering what those churches are, I could mention some of them, but we'll keep going here. Verse 37 says, "But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days of before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they did not know until the flood came and took them all away. So also will the coming of the Son of Man be." Okay, you know, Jesus explains what he meant when he said the days of Noah. It meant that they were just going around living life as normal. They were getting married, they were going to parties, they were eating, they were drinking. They were just going around living normally. And if you remember, they were living very wickedly. That's the whole reason God sent the flood in the first place. They're living a wicked lifestyle, rejecting the truth of God, rejecting any kind of obedience to the truth, and focused on worldly stuff. And that's what he lists there, is some worldly stuff. And it says that they didn't know. You know why they didn't know? You know why they did not know that the flood was coming? Because they refused to believe. Noah had spent 120 years building a boat, preaching the truth, warning people of what was to come. And yet they refused to believe it. Just like the people that refuse to believe that Jesus is coming back, that the end of the world is going to happen. They've been warned, they've been told, they choose to reject it. They choose to reject it. And because of that, for those who ignored the warnings, it came suddenly and unexpectedly. It's like, yeah, remember that guy, that crazy guy who's been building that giant boat over there for 120 years? I think maybe you should have listened. Maybe you should have listened. But the days of Noah, if you look into it, it kind of sounds like today. People who are concerned with worldly stuff. They're concerned with working and getting food and drinking and getting married. And that just kind of sounds like humans in 2025. Okay, more concerned with the cultural expectations than with what God says. And Jesus says it's going to be like that. It's going to be like that. So they observed the evidence. They heard the warnings. They saw the boat being built, but they ignored it. They went on living life as they pleased, and it cost them greatly. So if the warnings of God are taken lightly, if they're ignored, if they're not believed, it will come at a severe cost. like the death of all but six people on a planet for Noah. Severe cost. What was the difference between everyone who died during the flood and Noah and his family? Well, Noah was told by God that a flood was coming, and he actually believed it, so he arranged his life in accord to be aligned with the truth that God had revealed. So his schedule, you know what he spent his time doing? Building a boat. His schedule fit what God told him what was going to happen. His resources, his energy, his priorities. Everything changed from that day forward when God said, there's a flood coming. His goal in life changed. Everything changed. Why? Well, he actually believed God. He actually believed that what God said was going to happen was going to happen. So, if you aren't picking up on how this applies to us, we too have heard the warning of God. And for some of us, it's affected our life, like Noah. For some of us, it said, God, I believe you, and my life is going to prove it. Some, we've heard the warning, and we said we believe it, but we didn't bother to build the boat. Like, imagine if Noah's like, yep, you're right. I'm supposed to build a boat. If I don't build a boat, my whole family's going to die. I believe you, and I should build a boat. But he just never got around to building the boat. So that's some people. Well, yeah, I believe it, but my life hasn't changed in according to it. And then some people, they just ignore it. They don't believe it. They reject the truth. Living just like everyone around them. Getting married, eating, drinking, going about life. Verse 40. Then two men will be in the field, and one will be taken, and the other will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken, and the other will be left. So here we see this separation that occurs. This separation that occurs. You know, one person's taken and one is left behind. This is a complicated passage, a complicated couple verses, and frankly, it's a couple verses that a lot of people will misapply and misunderstand. Because when you hear of someone being taken and someone being left, you know what we think of? You know what Christians think of? If you know the Bible, you think of the rapture that happens where God takes his faithful, his people, and really removes them before the suffering and the judgment that is to come. But if we're paying attention, if we're paying attention to the timeline, that's not actually what's being referenced here. Okay, that's not what's being referenced here, because this is after the tribulation. The rapture happens before the tribulation. God takes them away. Here, this is after. Meaning that the people taken away, scholars, the people who have studied this, you can look into the word if you want to for taken away, the Greek word, I can't pronounce it, paralambano, that's the Greek word. You can look into it. But these are taken away to judgment. Some are left, some are taken away to judgment. But it really, you don't need to get lost in this. The idea is there's separation that happens. There's the faithful who have trusted God, who believe in Christ, and then there's the ones who aren't faithful, and they will be separated. The ones who have rejected the message of the truth. There's the believer and the unbeliever. Okay, and at this point, you'd be left kind of wondering, what am I supposed to do with this? Okay, Jesus says all this crazy stuff is going to happen, and one person's going to be left, and we'll take some, and you know what are we to do? Why does this matter? Okay, this sounds crazy, but how does it impact me? And Jesus, in a way, provides us the answer to that in verse 42, where he says, watch therefore. So because of that, watch, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Okay, so what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to be ready. We're supposed to be ready because we don't know when God's coming back. We don't know when the end is happening. We don't know. So our ignorance of the timing of Christ's return and the timing of all this crazy stuff to happen, our lack of knowing the day, the hour, does not provide an excuse for being unprepared. It does not give you an excuse for being unprepared. You might say, well, how can we expect to be ready if we don't know the day? Yeah, it doesn't work that way. That means you better be ready now. You better be ready. Now, for example, if I tell you that I'm going to pick you up tomorrow morning and I don't really tell you what time, you know what you do? You get ready early so that I'm not stuck waiting for you. Now, I'm more patient. I won't say I'm more patient than God. God's perfectly patient. But in this situation, I would probably sit in front of your house for a little bit and give you a minute to finish getting ready. There might come a time, though, where I leave you. There's been people on missions trips that weren't ready to go when we were going to go start our service and our work, and we just left them. Okay, they slept in, and, well, we've got stuff to do, so we're leaving here. But I would probably wait for a little bit. But God's not going to wait around when this happens. He's not going to say, hey, I know you're not ready. I'm here to get you. I'm here to take my faithful, and I'm here to punish the wicked, and I know you're not quite ready, so I'm just going to sit in the car. You get your stuff figured out. You read your Bible and decide what you believe. I'll wait for you here. No, when it's time, when this is happening, it's time. It's time. So not knowing what's going to happen does not, when it's going to happen, does not provide an excuse for being unprepared. You guys know who Julius Caesar is? Julius Caesar, there's a famous play written about him, but he actually was a historical figure, and he was famous for his military success and his strategy, and he had this policy with his army that he would never give them a warning for when they were going to depart and go to battle. They were never going to be given a warning. Why? Because that meant that they had to always be ready to fight. And that's why he was as impressive as he was. That meant that he always, always had soldiers who were ready to go. They were ready to go at a moment's notice. And here it talks about this homeowner. It says, well, if the homeowner had known when the thief was coming, they would have stayed home. They would have stayed awake. They would have been prepared. Have any of you ever had your house broken into? Yeah? Did the thief, like, send you an email to try to set up a schedule beforehand? No? No, they don't do that. The thief comes with no warning, no preparation, because the thief is smart enough to know if I give him, you know, if I call and give him a heads up, Peter is going to be ready for me this time. Now, rarely would I ever say that God is like a thief, but at least here, the Bible is saying God's going to be like a thief. He's not giving you a warning. He's not sending you an email to set up a schedule for when it will be convenient for you for him to return. And here we're talking about end days, but I think there's application for us in all of life. Okay, I think there's application for us that Jesus doesn't just set up a schedule with us for when it's convenient. Jesus doesn't wait to interfere and intervene in our life when we are okay with it, when we've prepared and when we're ready. No, he's going to come and he's going to interfere and he's going to guide you and he's going to direct you whenever he wants to, not when you're ready. Not when you've had time to think about it. He's going to say, hey, I got something for you to do. Are you ready? And if you say no, he's probably going to be leaving you behind. Okay? So we're supposed to be ready. We're supposed to wait and be watchful and ready. I think we think of waiting as a passive thing. Like if I tell you to wait, You think, like, I'm sitting on a bench, like you're waiting for the Jeep. Okay, I'm sitting at the stop, and every Jeep that passes is full, and I can't fit there, and it's just boring. I'm just stuck here at the bus stop trying to get to Bintan, and I'm waiting. You guys live in the Philippines, you know all about waiting. But that's not the kind of waiting that we're talking about here. Okay, this is not a lazy, sitting on the sofa, doing nothing kind of waiting, although that seems to be how many Christians think about it. They live lazily, selfishly, kind of like, wow, we'll figure out something tomorrow. But Jesus illustrates what this waiting should look like with kind of a parable, a story here at the end of this chapter. Verse 45, it says, "Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his house, over his household, to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all of his goods." So who's the faithful servant? The one whose master finds him faithfully serving, working, and obeying. Okay, and here we see that there is reward for the faithfulness. And that if you read on to the next example, that there is danger for neglect. There's reward for faithfulness and there's danger in neglect. He says, who is the faithful, the wise servant, the one who will be rewarded and set over his household? Well, the one who's found busy serving, doing what he's supposed to do while he's come, when he comes. So this waiting for God and being ready isn't a call for passivity, it's a call to activity. Okay, waiting for God, being ready, doesn't mean we all sit here at church with our Bibles. It means we serve Him, we worship Him, we obey Him, we live for Him. And the one who's found busy, he gets a just reward with great honor. In verse 47, right, it says, he'll be rewarded. He'll be given this authority. He'll be given more responsibility. So who is smart, faithful, and wise? The one who continues serving God even if he doesn't want to. Imagine that you serve God for the great majority of your life, and then it's like the day before the end, and you think, I've had enough. Okay, I don't want to stop the day before Jesus returns. I don't want to do that. I want him to find me busy. Okay, the master wants to find faithful servants serving him. He wants to find us doing something, not sitting and waiting, not lost in all of the cares of the world. Okay, not self-absorbed in our own feelings and emotions and desires, but faithful to the calling that he has given us. That's what God's looking for. And that's who we want to be. I mean, if you're at church today, I would imagine that's who you want to be. And yet, it seems like there are many today, many, many people today that after years of going to church still seem to be struggling to actually serve him. Struggling to actually figure out their calling, or maybe they know their calling, but they're unwilling to do it. They're unwilling to fulfill it. So if the master returns and finds the servant has done a good job, there'll be a reward. Jesus died to save you from the penalty of sin, the power of sin, the guilt of sin, but he also saved you for a mission. He created you. He created works for you to do. Okay, there's no excuses, there's no whining, there's no justifying, there's no reasonable excuse to give to fail to engage in that calling. Well, I just didn't think you were coming, Jesus, so I decided I'd take a nap. Time is short, it's running out for each one of us. Whether the end comes or we just die, time is short. Time is short. I want to use this life how God intends. is precious. Because of that, I've chosen to serve today, to love God today, to sacrifice for Him today. I want God to find me busy for Him. Okay, I want God to find me busy for Him. You guys know the phrase where people will say to go out with your boots on? Go out with your boots on. It's a very American phrase, going back to when Americans worked harder than they do now. And the idea is, I want to die wearing my work boots. I want to keep going. You know, soldiers wear boots. Construction workers wear boots. You want to go out still working, still able to serve, still doing something, not laying in a hospital bed. Okay, and of course we have no, we don't get to choose how we'll physically die, but spiritually, do you want to just kind of relax in bed? Or do you want to go out fully engaged? Fully engaged. So many fail to do that. Many fail to do that, which is why we get to this not so wise servant in verse 47. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all of his goods, but, verse 48, we see this other servant, if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and he begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he's not looking for him, and at an hour that he is not aware of, and he will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Okay, this is the exact opposite of the first guy. This guy, he thinks, well, my master's not around, and he hasn't been here for a couple days, so it seems like he's delaying. It seems like he's not coming back here, and I'm sick of serving him. I'm sick of working for him. I've had enough. So you know what? I'm going to do what I want to do. He says in his heart, the master is delaying. So what does he do? He starts beating up the other servants, starts taking advantage of the master. And he goes and joins the drunkards. But notice that this story, this illustration here, seems to be about a person who knows that he has a master. Okay, he believes that the master exists, believes that the master is in charge, believes that the master is coming back. So he believes in God. He believes he exists. He believes he's in charge. Believes that Jesus is going to come back. But he just thinks that he's got some time. Well, he's delaying. He's delaying. So he thought he had time to live as he pleased and that he could kind of get things straight, figure things out another day. But the thing is, he didn't have time because the master came when he wasn't expecting him. A lot of people live that way with God where they think, I'll figure out this religion thing later. I'll figure this out later. I'm going to live how I want right now, and we'll figure this out later. Some Christians serve God faithfully to the end. They fight to serve God with the right heart. They actually love God. They eagerly wait for God. They're excited that the master will return. They're excited. They want him to come back. Because they're not embarrassed by their actions. They know that they're using their time as they should. On the other hand, there are those who get sick of serving God, like this guy. And then what does he do? He turns against his fellow servants. He abandons the mission and goes to the drunkards. So notice kind of the order of things, the progression here of what happened. First of all, it started in his mind, in his heart. He said in his heart, so that's your thought life. Well, God's not coming back. So it started with wrong thoughts about what's true. It started with wrong thinking, not believing truth. And then he stopped serving the master. Then he started to hurt the work of those who were still serving. Starts beating them. And then he leaves them to go find friendship with those who never had bothered to serve the master, the drunkards. And it ends in severe punishment. Okay, think of this in real clear practical terms for us. Well, I started to kind of get angry with God. I started to kind of have enough. So I stopped serving him. And then I decided I really didn't like his people. So I wasn't kind to them. I abandoned them. I hurt them. I stabbed them in the back. And I went to the world. I went to the world. And then the master came. Then God came. And it was costly. This severe punishment, notice this punishment, he's cut in two. And then thrown where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. When the Bible talks about being thrown where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth, it's indicating being thrown into hell. But this guy, not only does he go to hell, but first he's cut in half. Okay, so this is pretty severe. This is severe. And it all started with wrong thinking about God. And it all started with someone who at one point was a servant of the master. So in conclusion here, what are we to take from all of this? Well, Jesus' return is certain. Jesus' return is certain, but its timing is unknown. Unknown. So we should live in watchfulness, readiness, and activity, service, faithfulness. So really, again, we're left with the question is, are we actually ready for this? Are we faithful with what he has entrusted to us? And there's two things to consider here. Two things to consider. For unbelievers, those who have not put their faith in God, those who have not been converted, who are not Christians, well, for them to be ready, what do they need to do? They need to repent and put their faith in Christ. That's how they'd be ready. For the believers, okay, you've put your faith in God. What do? You stay faithful. You stay alert. You stay living, expecting God to return. I want to end by rereading the verses I started with. Hebrews 10, 36 and 38. Patient endurance is what you need now. Patient endurance is what you need now. So that you will continue to do God's will. Then you will receive all that he has promised. For in just a little while, the coming one will come, and he will not delay. And my righteous ones, they will live by faith. They will live by faith. But I take no pleasure in anyone who turns away. We're talking about, some of you have jobs that you maybe don't like. Some of you work at night. And have you ever had a situation you were in where you just could not wait for it to end? So you sat there staring at your watch. You know, for those of us who actually wear watches, staring at your watch, just counting the seconds for how much time is left. You know that excitement if you have a job and it's like, I'm done at 8 a.m. I just have to make it till 8 a.m. and then I can get out of this place. You've probably experienced that. You got a class and you spend the whole class not paying any attention to the instructor but just staring at the clock, and you might as well have stayed home because you haven't learned anything because you're just counting down the seconds until you can leave. You might be saying, what does this have to do with anything? But let me read to you one final verse. Psalm chapter 130, verse 6 says, my soul waits for the Lord more than a watchman waits for the morning. So a watchman is basically a security guard. Basically a security guard. They're watching and they've got the night shift. And you know what? They just want to be done. They've had enough. They want to go to sleep. So they're waiting for morning very expectantly, very excitedly. Excitedly, I don't think that's a word. They're excited about it. They can't wait for the morning. And the writer of that psalm says, that's how I am with God. I wait for him. I want him. I'm looking forward to him. I wonder if we can say the same. Are we excited about this? Jesus is coming back. And if we'll be like the faithful servant, we can't wait. There's great anticipation. There's great excitement. For like the evil servant, great fear, rightfully so.